The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Kroot.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition. Dom, you made it all the way to the weekend, my little buddy.
Yeah, baby.
Well, we'll get you home. 844-967-2789. Rich, lightly screening the calls. We're going to make it a happier, happy hour, Dom. And I want to start this hour talking about our president, Joe Biden. The good one.
The good yeah, versus the former guy.
Versus defend on Trump, the former guy, your guy. Dom, Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post, from the body of this piece, Biden's punchier, more aggressive, and funnier campaign has defied expectations set by those pushing the too old meme and underestimating his communication skills. Just months ago, Democrats were wringing their hands, trying to figure out if they could magically eject him from the race following a feisty State of the Union. That's the one I told you, Dom. Move the needle. Following a feisty State of the Union, however, Biden has taken a more aggressive tone. The complaints have virtually disappeared. And we've seen Biden's caustic ads lambasting former President Donald Trump, a full throttle attack on Republican abortion bans, and frequent Biden jabs at his opponent. Now, Biden took Trump's invitation to ask, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And he ran with it. And Biden's team has begun mercilessly taunting Trump about his snoozing in court. This is too rich to be ignored, right, Tom?
Again today.
Biden even reached back to Trump's presidency, mishandling of the COVID tweeting, don't inject bleach. And don't vote for the guy who told you to inject bleach.
That's good advice, Mr. President.
As Rubin writes, Biden is pressing every advantage, money, organization, and freedom to travel. Because unlike his opponent, who's stuck in court, in the initial phase of the long general election fight to November, Biden has traveled to every battleground state in the months since his State of the Union address, with visits to Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and of course, Wisconsin. Dom, I saw him right up the street. Above and beyond that, while Trump has held just two rallies in Ohio and Georgia, the report continued, Biden is out and about seizing on the differences in their recent scheduling, flipping a criticism back on Trump about Trump's absences that Trump frequently used against Biden during the 2020 campaign amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, did Rubin forget that Trump did campaign sort of kind of in Green Bay? Did he not? But that was before
Trump
this
in Green Bay.
Before this trial started.
Right. And Trump, of course, will be in Waukesha, Wisconsin next week. Rubin goes on to
write, as will I, Dom, because I'm credentialed media.
Yeah, big shot. Biden also capitalized on Republicans' blunders. He jumped on Republicans' rejection of tough bipartisan border security bill. He slammed apologists for Russia's Vladimir Putin and needled Trump about his Truth Social stock. Here's what he tweeted out. If Trump's stock in his Truth Social company drops any lower, he might do better under my tax plan than his. In a blistering speech in Florida on Tuesday.
That's pretty good.
Biden Dark made Brandon. Clear, Trump bears responsibility for the abortion bans popping up in the aftermath of the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. Let's be clear, Biden said. There's one person responsible for this nightmare, and he's acknowledged and brags about it, Donald Trump. He went on to mock Trump's insistence that sending the issue to the states is working brilliantly. He caustically asked, it's a 6-week ban in Florida. It's really brilliant, isn't it? Even before women know they're pregnant. Is that brilliant? Question mark. He wasn't done. Trump, quote, describes Dobbs' decision as a miracle. Maybe it's coming from the Bible he's trying to sell. Biden said, well, I almost wanted to buy one just to see what the hell's in it.
That was some funny stuff. We played that earlier this week for our audience. Hope you were listening.
The campaign has months to go. Biden supporters will need to steel themselves for the inevitable ups and downs of the campaign. But it's hard to remember why Democrats were so distraught about nominating him. He's not the one caught dozing off nearly every day, slurring his words, rambling incoherently about Gettysburg, running a sparse campaign schedule, or whining about the temperature. Rubin writes, Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post.
It's really
Okay, we'll take it. Now, my understanding, though, also the other day, he was reading off the teleprompter, and he said the word pause when he should have just paused. Did you see that? Did you hear that?
I missed it. I believe it. Did I ever tell you when I was a young guy, I went all the way to Houston, Texas with my mom, and I was supposed to be part of reading alouding. And I was not a strong reader alouder, so I had rehearsed lots of times. Mom didn't want me to screw it up either, so she made sure.
Yes, very important.
So we had read our scripts, and there were like 8 or 10 people. It was like a table read behind a curtain, and on the other side of this curtain were literally like thousands of people. And it was sort of a drama, sort of a mini 15-minute drama sort of thing for the entertainment of the dining guest. The National Foster Parents Association, I think, was the event. Houston, Texas. I was about a 10-year-old. And I got to the important part. I was one of the children in the story, and the word sigh appeared. And I read it aloud, but I said, sigh. You know, I read it as if I were sighing. Right. And the whole house burst. You know, everybody just cracked up laughing. And, you know, at this moment in my life, I'd be proud of that because I misspeak on the radio constantly. But I could
especially
just,
names.
I just have to say, I was a little mortified. I wasn't as experienced a public speaker as Joe Biden now finds himself. I couldn't roll with it. You hate
well,
when
you
I
learn
to fail
roll
to roll with it, right, Don?
Well, we always try to roll with it, man. And again, we make mistakes, and we are professional radio professionals, professional talkers on the radio and the microphone.
Diane Hesselbein is the senator from Middleton. I know that she's my senator. You didn't screw it up. The column you read, just want to put it out there on the record. Earlier in the show.
Oh, thank you for correcting the record from something 2 hours ago. What are you talking about, man? Thank you for
interrupting me. We're trying to get it right.
Point being, yes, apparently the president, my president, your president, Joe Biden, was giving a speech and using the teleprompter, and in the midst of using the teleprompter, said the word pause when he was supposed to merely actually pause. Okay. And so what? I mean, I get it. We make those mistakes. Maybe you were younger. Maybe he's older. Whatever, whatever. You know what? He's not. He's not an insurrectionist bastard. He's not. He's not. He's not. You know, pushing the limits of presidential power, trying to undo this country. He's not. He's not a friend of Vladimir Putin. He's not encouraging white nationalists and Christian nationalists. You know, this is not what Joe Biden is. So people make mistakes. I have been known occasionally, very super rarely, to sometimes make a mistake. Ah, so what? Man, who do you want in that office? Who do you want in that role? A guy like Joe Biden, who actually has some empathy. He was on Howard Stern today. And Howard Stern went off on about
a love fest.
Love fest. Telling, yo, but I got to tell you, I agree with Stern in that regard, man. Donald Trump actually has some empathy. He has experienced loss in his life. A lot of it. I want to throw this one out there before we go to break. You can join us on the Fridays, 844-967-2789. From the Hill, President Biden joined radio host Howard Stern for a surprise live interview Friday, sitting down with the Shock Jock in his New York City studio for roughly an hour-long discussion about Biden's personal life and his presidency. One of the more revealing moments of the interview, Biden recounted his feelings of despair after the death of his first wife and 13-month-old daughter, including thinking about getting drunk despite never drinking alcohol. I used to sit there and just think, I'm going to take out a bottle of scotch. I'm just going to drink it and get drunk. I just thought about it. You don't need to be crazy to commit suicide. If you've been at the top of the mountain, you think it's never going to be there again, Biden added. I thought, let me just go to the Delaware Memorial Bridge and jump. Biden encouraged those who are struggling to seek therapy. The interview caught many by surprise because it was not listed on Biden's public schedule. He spent Thursday night in New York City after attending a fundraiser hosted by actor Michael Douglas in Westchester County. Stern asked Biden other questions surrounding his personal and professional life, including meeting his first wife, playing football, and stories about his stutter growing up. He also spoke of his time in law school, in which he called himself a jerk for not taking the schooling seriously, including ditching textbooks. Stern praised Biden and family repeatedly during the largely friendly interview, also covering Biden's time as a public defender, his willingness to debate former President Trump ahead of November's election, and his thoughts on the Supreme Court, which Biden called maybe the most conservative in modern history. Mr. President, look at me, sitting with the president, Stern said near the close of the interview. Look at me, sitting with Howard Stern, Biden responded. At times, the interview turned more lighthearted, including when Stern asked Biden if he ever went on Facebook to look up women who may have rejected him in the past to brag about now serving as the most powerful leader in the world. Biden apparently laughed off that question. Stern reportedly sought an interview with Biden during the 2020 campaign, but it never came together. Former Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton sat down with Stern in 2019. Stern had in the past been friendly with Trump, but since has become an outspoken critic of the former president. I think Paul Tencher, a former Democratic Senate aide, wrote in a post on the social platform X that Stern's radio program was truly an important cultural show for voters we desperately need. For the sitting president to talk about the suicidal thoughts after the death of his wife and his child, I think is really something goes to the character of the man. You don't hear opening up like that personal stories from Donald Trump. It's all about, you know, raw dogging the porn star and trying to cover it up so he doesn't lose his electoral chances.
Well, when you're a celebrity, they just let you do it.
You can do anything.
Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. A Friday, you can air your grievances. You can just listen along. You can text us. And you can always go straight to Alexa and just say, play Devil Radio. It still works. I tried it today. You want to
nice.
Listen to
play
us?
Play Devil Radio.
Play Devil Radio. Alexa, play Devil Radio. It's going to do it right now.
I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for those meddling devil's advocates.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Happy Friday to us all. Airing of the grievances. Join us on the lines 844-967-2789.
Dominic, well, Joe Biden was appearing on Howard Stern. Donald Trump was appearing in a New York courtroom as defendant Trump. And it's been a hell of a week for the guy. I mean, I've really enjoyed this week. Broadcasting each and every day, sort of compiling the details of the day's courtroom behavior, the farting, the snoozing, the grimacing. I've got to admit, Tom, this is why I come to work each and every day and do a radio show.
The rage tweeting, the gag order violating. There's so many things to discuss.
Well, let's see if we can kind of put a bow on the week. Donald Trump fought mightily before and after. My source, the Washington Post here, Dom. Let's see who the author is. Want to make sure I give proper credit. Multi-byline, Tom Jackson, Darren Hawkins, Devlin Barrett, and Shayna Jacobs. Donald Trump fought mightily before and after he was elected president to keep secret the embarrassing details of his private life, but often failed despite having a fat checkbook and a well-connected tabloid editor in his pocket. According to the first week of evidence at his trial, I just like saying that, Former presidents typically spend their post-White House years writing memoirs, making well-paid speeches, and cementing their place in history. Dom, let's give the man credit. He is cementing his place in history like nobody ever thought possible. Back to the writing. By becoming the first former president to face criminal trial, Trump is instead sitting in court, watching someone else try to define his legacy, even as his campaign for the second term, tries to campaign for a second term in the Oval Office. Over 4 days of testimony this week, former National Enquirer executive David Pecker, the unfortunately named, lots of Pecker talk this week, Dom, told the jury not just how deeply involved Trump's team was in using the supermarket tabloid to fuel his 2016 presidential campaign, but how celebrities and politicians generally try to buy, trade, or bully their way out of scandalous stories. Well, Trump's a good bully, or at least he tries to be, Dom. A little bit more here. Prosecutors tried to show that Trump was acutely aware of the machinations being made on his behalf by the tabloid executive and Michael Cohen, his former lawyer and fixer. After Pecker's testimony concluded Friday, jurors heard from Trump's longtime assistant and Cohen's former banker. Now, evidence shows Cohen paid $130,000 in hush money to adult film actress Stormy Daniels shortly before the 2016 election to buy her silence about an alleged sexual encounter she had with Trump years earlier. And Trump is on trial for falsifying business records related to his reimbursement to Cohen of that payment. Prosecutors alleged, he categorized the payments as a legal fee rather than a campaign expense to keep it from the public disclosure forms.
Of course he did. Curdy, the transactional tabloid dynamic was spelled out in raw terms in text messages sent by Dylan Howard, one of Pecker's top deputies and a former Inquirer editor. The most pointed of those messages were presented to the presiding judge, Juan Merchan, but probably won't be seen by the jurors because Howard is in Australia and for health reasons can't appear at the trial to testify. Information is powerful, and I'm collecting a lot, said one text from Howard to a close relative in June of 2016. At the time, Howard had been assessing the credibility of various people who came forward with scandalous stories about candidate Trump. Mind you, in the event that he's elected, it doesn't hurt the favors I've done, provided it's kept secret, Howard texted. At least if he wins, I'll be pardoned for electoral fraud, quote unquote. For years, Pecker told the jury he and his friend Trump, then a reality TV star, had a mutually beneficial relationship that involved information sharing in the celebrity world. When Trump decided to run for president, that relationship kicked into overdrive as the supermarket gossip sheet published glowing stories about the brash tycoon and ran many other stories pummeling his political rivals. I guess I would call that fake news literally, people. Yet the first week of trial testimony shown the arrangement was far from foolproof. Just 4 days before the 2016 election, the Wall Street Journal revealed that the Inquirer had secretly paid Playboy model Karen McDougal for the rights to her story about an affair with Trump. The Inquirer then refused to publish the story, a practice known as catch and kill. After the Journal wrote about the arrangement, Trump called Pecker. He was furious. How could this happen? I thought you had this under control, Trump said. According to Pecker, he was very agitated. At the time, Pecker's company publicly denied buying McDougal's story to keep her quiet. After being granted immunity from prosecution, however, he testified that was precisely what he'd done. Cohen promised him he would be reimbursed for paying McDougal, Pecker said, but his lawyers warned him later that such compensation was potentially a crime and said he may have already broken campaign finance law by paying McDougal. And so, Pecker testified, he balked at paying again when a lawyer for Daniels came forward to sell her story of a sexual tryst with Trump. I am not purchasing this story. I'm not going to be involved with a porn star, and I am not a bank, Pecker said he told Cohen.
What am I, a bank?
Trump ultimately instructed Cohen to pay Daniels $130,000 for her silence, according to evidence from the case in a previous federal investigation. The resulting reimbursements are the reason Trump is now on trial for 34 counts, falsifying business records. Of course, he's pled not guilty. Manhattan DA charges Trump wanted such stories suppressed to aid his presidential campaign. Of course he did, particularly after the Washington Post reported in October of 2016 that Trump had bragged on tape about grabbing women by their genitalia. You know, Crudy, when you're a star, they'll let you do anything. Trump's defense team had argued that most of what the prosecutors are showing the jury is not criminal conduct, saying that if any crime was committed, it was by Cohen, not Trump. Look at my attorney. Prosecutors say Trump's primary motive in keeping the scandalous stories quiet was to help his campaign. But evidence they elicited from Pecker shows Trump was still trying to keep those secrets after he won the election. Trump also worried about boxes of documents about him that he acquired over the years, Pecker testified. The executive tried to reassure his friend and Cohen the boxes of files were harmless, just collection of old news stories. Nevertheless, at a meeting at Trump Tower in late 2016, Cohen pressed Pecker to let him go through the boxes. Pecker refused. At that same meeting, Cohen complained to Pecker that Trump had yet to reimburse him for the money he'd paid to Daniels and that he hadn't received his Christmas bonus from the boss. He asked me to speak to Donald Trump, Pecker said in court. So Pecker urged Trump to pay Cohen his bonus, to which the president-elect replied, "Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it." Don't worry about it. Once Trump became president, it was harder to keep his skeletons in the closet. Hence the payments, baby.
Oh, they're all coming out now. Devils Advocates Radio Show keeps me entertained each and every afternoon, 3 to 6, 3 hours. That's all we need. More Devils, a happier, happy hour indeed.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a happier, happy hour indeed. I'm rolling through it, and we've been joined by a fine guest. Didn't want to promote you too much. I know you are a working OBGYN, and you had duty at the hospital, but she is Dr. Kristen Lierley. She is also a candidate for the 8th Congressional District for Congress right here from the great state of Wisconsin. Welcome back, Dr. Lierley.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me, and sorry about the short notice. We just never know what's going to happen at the hospital, so I have to be ready.
Well, I only asked you, Kristen, today, so I also must apologize for the short notice, but I had noted, Kristen, the U.S. Supreme Court had more arguments this week that affect women's abortive reproductive rights. And specifically, if I understood it, the state of Idaho wants to retain autonomy over its state and to basically overrule the supremacy of federal law, which would suggest that women have the right to emergency abortions, even if it's not a life-threatening situation. Maybe it's just renal shutdown, or perhaps infertility would be the consequence. My understanding is there seems to be a lot of conservatives on this court that would be sympathetic to Idaho's pleading that, well, how can you possibly make the doctors of Idaho perform an abortion if that's against state law? Kristen, you must have opinions. I'll let you go now.
I have so many opinions. I mean, there's so much to talk about with this case, from the language that you saw the conservative justices using, which was not objective legal medical terminology, but it was emotional terminology, which is inappropriate in an arena like this. But then just going back to the whole case, we're talking about EMTALA here. It's the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act. This is the law that was passed that says that if you go to the emergency department for any reason at all, heart attack, stroke, vaginal bleeding, they have to take care of you. They either have to stabilize and treat you there or transfer you. So what's happened in Idaho is they have a state law that says that unless the mother's life is in danger, that doctors can't treat these patients. So they're stuck between EMTALA, the federal law, and the Idaho law. And what we're seeing with doctors, not just OBGYNs, but family medicine doctors, and especially emergency medicine docs, because this is their domain, is that they're leaving. And in fact, Idaho has lost almost a quarter of their doctors in the last couple of years because of this terrible political interference in our patients' healthcare. We just can't take care of our patients. It's an impossible situation.
In light of Dobbs, Dr. Kristen Lierley, our fine guest, in light of Dobbs, what is the solution? I know you're running for Congress. Is it codification of effectively the language, or something mirroring Roe v. Wade? How do Do we solve this problem so we don't see states like Idaho taking it to the U.S. Supreme Court?
I would love to see something that prevents politicians from dictating our personal health care decisions. Exactly what that's going to end up looking like, I think, is a little difficult to predict. But you can bet that I am going to be involved in that when I'm elected to Congress, because, man, nobody wants that, whether we're talking about reproductive rights or cancer treatment or whether you get your medication to treat your obesity. It doesn't matter. Politicians have no right interfering in your personal medical decision making.
Did you know she kind of looked at me when she said obesity? You are listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. We got a fine guest. She is running for Congress. She's an OBGYN by vocation. She's Dr. Kristen Lyerly. Kristen, obviously, this is a political issue. It has motivated you to run for the Congress. How do you think this plays out? Help us read the tea leaves. Obviously, it's a motivating issue for a number of women. And if we look at the most recent statewide election, 2023, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, it clearly motivated the base. But let me ask you, currently, we've got this sort of Dane County District Court decision that seemingly has pushed back on the 1849 law. So there's less than clarity in the state of Wisconsin, or at least no finality legally as to the status of women's rights to have an abortion. Is it as convoluted as it has gotten, Kristen? Is it still the motivating factor for women, to your opinion, politically?
I think it is. And I'll just tell you that my name is on that judgment in Dane County Circuit Court. And that judgment has been appealed, and it's likely making its way up to the Supreme Court. So you're right. The final judgment is not there in Wisconsin. We've resumed abortion care in Milwaukee and Madison and Sheboygan, but the rest of the state has not. And just 2 weeks ago, I talked with a colleague in Green Bay who said they still are not providing abortion care for people who have complicated pregnancies, care that they would have been able to deliver before, because they're waiting for that final ruling. So it's still a problem, even in Wisconsin. And if the Supreme Court comes back and rules in Idaho's favor, that can certainly affect us in Wisconsin as well, and in a number of other states as well. So this is a problem that is not going away on a personal level, and it is certainly not going away on a political level. A lot of people were afraid that this was just going to fade away like so many of these political issues do, but women of reproductive age, women who have been through this fight before, know that this is actually not a political issue. It is a personal issue. It is sustaining. And frankly, it is the issue that is going to get us through November and get us past all of this ugliness and divisiveness. We just have to make sure that we band together, we organize, and we get out and vote.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Dr. Kristen Lyerly, our friend and a candidate for Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District. Kristen, have you ever had a situation during your practice in either Wisconsin or Minnesota? Presumably the laws aren't as strict, certainly in Minnesota. The Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, have you had any issues? Has this come up in any of your medical efforts in your career?
Since I've been practicing after the Dobbs decision, I've been in Minnesota, and it's not an issue here, luckily. So when my patient comes to me and she's bleeding and she's scared, I know that all I need to do is take care of her. And I use my medical expertise and all the tools we have at the hospital to make sure that she receives the best possible care. But that is not what's happening in Idaho. And it is incredibly frightening for the people who are receiving care and the people who are providing care. I have friends who are, he's an emergency medicine doc, she's an OBGYN doc. They lived in rural Idaho. They loved their hometown. They moved their parents there to be there with their family. And when all of this went down, they left. And when they left, that maternity unit closed. Idaho has lost 3 maternity units in the last 2 years. And it's all a result of what's going on there now, this hostility. And I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to what's going on with the Attorney General in Idaho, Raul Labrador, and some of the comments that he's making, but that's very interesting as well. Have you seen that in the news?
No, please enlighten us.
Oh, I will. So this is the fella who is making it very challenging for people to receive care and to offer care. And he is flipping the script and saying that doctors are politicizing this issue, that doctors are lying about how many patients have to be transported out of Idaho for care when, like, we have data that shows who's leaving and why. So you can't dispute that. But he's saying that because doctors aren't testifying under oath, that we're not telling the truth. And he's saying that doctors are sharing these stories just to scare people. And I'm here to tell you that I don't share these stories to scare people. I share these stories on behalf of my patients so that people who have not had these experiences understand how scary politicians are making it for people.
Kristen, Congresswoman Gwen Moore here in the state of Wisconsin, state rep, I believe, Lisa Subek, are pushing for a right to contraception. I wonder your senses, how those that are opposed to abortion also are opposed to contraception. I mean, I fail to see the linkage here. I was wondering if in your position, you can enlighten me a bit on that.
Well, this is all part of the problem on the right. They can't decide where the limits are. So where are the limits on abortion? Where are the limits on contraception? What are they comfortable with women doing with women's bodies? And that's why on the left, we are so in support of people making their own decisions. I take care of people who are Catholic, who do not want to use any form of hormonal anything for any reason. Birth control pills and other forms of birth control are used for things other than birth control. We use it for pain and bleeding, sometimes to treat cancer. We use them for a lot of different things, but sometimes patients are not comfortable with that because of their ideology. So my obligation as a physician is not to say, well, too bad you're Catholic and you don't believe in this, you have to take it. My job is to say, I respect you and I see where you're coming from. Let's find a solution that's going to work for you within the context of your life. So when you look at these opposing ideologies, you recognize how split and wrong they are on the right as they are trying to take away our freedoms. And I'm so honored to know Lisa Subak and to know Gwen Moore and to appreciate the work that they are doing to make sure that people have access to contraception. This is how we prevent unplanned pregnancies. This is how we treat medical conditions. And it's shocking that we have to codify this medical treatment, but in this day and age, we simply can't be safe enough.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Dom's been abstinent since middle school. We've got a fine guest. She is Dr. Kristen Lierley, an OBGYN, a congressional candidate. Dr. Lierley, I've got to ask you, we hear the claims of the right about late-term abortions and abortion on demand and post-birth abortions, if you believe the former President Donald Trump, that obviously does not exist. That would be murder. But how common or uncommon is a circumstance where a wanted child and there's something drastically wrong with the pregnancy and the doctor, the patient learn of this late in the pregnancy? Kristen, how often does this tragic circumstance happen?
Sadly, it happens a fair amount because the way that we provide care as a fetus, as an embryo is turning into a fetus and developing, we typically do an ultrasound at about 20 weeks. And that's where we can see a lot of the structures. The development has gotten to the point where we can see the brain and the kidneys and the stomach and all of those things. And that's where we often will diagnose some of these devastating, heartbreaking scenarios where patients do have wanted babies that they've already connected with and that they desperately would love to see be part of their family, but it's not going to work out for them. And that's when they have to make these really difficult decisions. And they bring in the council of experts, high-risk pregnancy doctors, social workers, faith leaders, whoever they need to help them make the best decision. Some people choose to continue their pregnancies, depending on the circumstances, and some people choose abortion. But the most important thing is that they have to choose. because this is their life and they have to live with the consequences, the impact of these decisions for the rest of their lives, because it does affect you physically, emotionally for the rest of your life. No one can make those decisions besides you.
Kristen, you got to split your time quite a bit now. You are an OBGYN practicing and you are a congressional candidate. Let's talk about the political side now. How's the campaign going? You pointed out to me, I was unaware, Reuters got you on the hot list. Reuters got you on one of the races to watch, Wisconsin's 8th CD, that's yours. So how's the campaign going and how can people get involved?
Oh, it's so much fun. We are shaping up more like a Senate race than a House race. The engagement has been ridiculous. It's been just over 3 weeks and we've got over 11,000 individual donors. We've pulled in over $300,000. The number of media outlets and people who are reaching out to pitch in, it's just heartwarming. We know we're on to something and we would love to have you on board too. KristenForWisconsin.com.
Oh, don't worry, sister. We're on board. Dr. Kristen Lierley, thank you so much for making some time for the Devil's Advocates. Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too, guys. Thank you. Thanks, Dom.
One last segment for your grievances. It's Friday. We air them. 844-967-2789. This is wild.
The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
Yeah, thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show, our last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now, 844-967-2789. Stick around, Busted Pencils coming up next. Also, want to shout out to some birthdays going on up there. My cousin Tom, it's his birthday today. Oh, yeah, and I think, what? Trump's wife. It was her birthday today, too. He wished her a happy birthday from the steps of the courthouse where he is, you know, on trial for election interference and the payoff of the porn star that he had sex with while his wife, who he just wished a happy birthday to, was home pregnant with their son. I'm sorry, their newborn. She was no longer pregnant. So happy birthday, Cousin Tom.
And Melania. And thank you to our most recent guest, Dr. Kristen Lierley. We wish her well in the 8th. And the 8th is bigger than you, Dom. I'm going to be up at the Wisconsin Grassroots Network next Saturday in Appleton at Lawrence University. And if you'd like to meet Dr. Kristen Lierley, she's going to be there as well. I said, well, that gets pretty close to your district. She said, pretty close. Appleton is in the district. So if you're in Outagamie County, if you're in the Appleton area, come see who should be the next congressperson from the 8th CD. And I will be the midday MC, and I think I'm speechifying in the morning, Dom. So a busy day for yours truly, but, you know, come see Dr. Lierley. She's the impressive.
Check her out online, Kristen for Wisconsin. That's two I's in Kristen for Wisconsin spelled out .com.
Dominic, Trump's best birthday wishes delivered outside the Manhattan criminal courtroom were key witnesses, including disgraced tabloid publishers, imprisoned former fixers, and alleged mistress Stormy Daniels. Well, Dom, Trump was sort of roundly ridiculed after the press conference hit social media, Trump wishing Melania a happy birthday from happy the courthouse steps. Happy birthday to Melania, who I'd like to be with, wrote ex-user Really American in a satirical quote, mockingly attributed to Trump. But I'm at this trial because I had sex with the porn star while she was pregnant with our son, and I paid $130,000 to hide it so voters wouldn't have to find out.
Happy birthday, Melania.
The Twitterverse having a little fun with this one, Dom. Now, Trump has pled not guilty. Strongly pled not guilty, to my understanding, Dom.
Powerfully, very powerfully.
And, you know, the playmate, the former Playboy playmate, McDougal, said she and Trump had a sexual relationship while Melania was pregnant with Trump's son's son, Barron. And on Friday, Trump said he was unable to spend time with Melania on her birthday because he faced a rigged trial. Yes, I think she appreciates, you know, the Melania time, if you know what I'm saying. Her and perhaps her cabana boy. a little bit more. I want to start by wishing my wife, Melania, a very happy birthday, Trump said. It would be nice to be with her, but I'm in a courthouse for a rigged trial. I mean, don't you feel bad for him? Melania's name was soon trending on Twitter. Trump says he would rather spend the day with Melania for her birthday, but he has to be in court. Trump is literally in court because he enjoyed cheating on Melania. Well, yes, that and covering it up. So anyways, Dom, you know, I bet he's not going to get any nookie this weekend. I'm just saying. Birthday wishes or no.
I wonder what kind of gift he got for his wife. Crudy, I do have a grievance. Josh Dossie reporting at the Washington Post. GOP urges Secret Service to move protesters from park near convention area. Oh, yeah. The Republican Party is urging the Secret Service to move the protesters farther away from the arena in Milwaukee, where the party will hold its convention in July, according to a letter sent to the agency on Friday. Milwaukee's plan to host protesters in a one-city block park about a quarter mile from the arena is dangerous because thousands of convention attendees will be forced to walk by the park en route to the festivities, a lawyer for the Republican Party
wrote in a letter. They might be exposed to protest!
The park is situated between two main streets that the Republican National Committee says convention attendees will use to get to the venue. Here's the quote. This will force thousands of peaceful attendees and demonstrators who may otherwise choose to avoid or limit direct proximate engagement with one another to be in extremely close, consistent, and unavoidable proximity. As recent college and university campus clashes make plain, forced proximity heightens tensions among peaceful attendees and demonstrators of differing ideologies and increases the risk of escalation to verbal or even physical clashes and corresponding law enforcement intervention, wrote the lawyer Tag Segurta of McGuire Woods.
I'm going to need the protesters move back to Oconomowoc, please.
This is what I'm saying. They want the Secret Service to include the area called Pier Marquette Park in its security perimeter, which would force the city to choose a different area for its First Amendment zone. Now, I'm in Milwaukee. I live here. I know what they're talking about. Pier Marquette Park, where they're already suggesting they put the protesters, where the DNC had the protesters, in my opinion, is already too far away from the site of and hearing of the convention. And these wussy Republicans, all of a sudden, they're concerned that they might get jeered when they're walking down the street. Yeah, get used to it. You might get jeered walking down the street, especially when you're carrying your Confederate flags and all you nice people with your torches on both sides. Give me a break. This is going to be a disaster. The activists in Milwaukee are already fired up about the Pier Marquette location, and now the GOP wants them to, what did you say? Oconomowoc. You don't have to go that far. Maybe to Waukesha.
Well, we don't want people out in the good parts in Waukesha. Maybe move them on to Dane County for protest. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to our fine guests. They included William Walter from Our Wisconsin Revolution and congressional candidate OBGYN Dr. Kristen Lyerly. Thank you to Rich. Thank you, Dom, for showing up on a Friday for a change. Thank you all for showing up on a Friday. It was a great week. Next week, only getting better. I'll be at Trump on Wednesday. Dom, on his ass.